On Pilot TV this week, we are back in the kitchen with Carmi and the gang for the final season of The Bear on Disney+, retreating beneath the earth for more dystopian science fiction with Rebecca Ferguson et al. In season 3 of Silo on Apple TV, and taking a side quest with Reese Witherspoon's character from Legally Blonde with series spin-off Elle on Prime Video. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that has two logistical problems to deal with this week. The first, of course, being that it is a brain-boiling 37 degrees outside today, which is why when I arrived at the office this morning, I largely resembled soup. So that was nice. The second thing is that while Boyd Hilton is here, present and correct, hello, Boyd, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Good. I'm pleased. But while Boydie is here, if we were to look to my left, Steph Seelan is not here. That chair is empty. That is because she is not here. And it is not because of the sweltering heat, but because due to train lines being down, she is stuck in balmy Luton. But don't worry, because thanks to the miracle of modern technology, we are able to beam her voice into our lovely air-conditioned studio from her kitchen, which I can only assume is currently comparable to the seventh circle of hell. How are you, Steph? Are you a big sweaty mess?
Oh my God, I'm so hot. It's just so hot. Like, it's crazy. Like, it's like Armageddon. Like, the schools are closing. No one's going anywhere. It's just absolutely crazy here. And yeah, I literally couldn't. The only way to get into London was walk. And I would have had to stop doing that yesterday.
Had you been more professional, I would say you'd
and
have put the effort in.
Less lazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm just being very
Jesus
lazy. I know.
Can I just say that James has set this up so that, listeners, so that we can all see each other. But this isn't going out on the...
No, so it has occurred to me that actually having Steph visible on here is not a good idea, because it means that when you speak, Steph, I'm inclined to like look down at you on my little laptop screen
I was
here.
Say, my current angle of you, James, is up your nose.
Should I adjust that for you? Is that better?
Yeah, I mean, it was ridiculous.
We're in a group chat so that we can see Steph's smiling, sweaty face.
It was a very weird angle.
Yeah.
Very disturbing.
Well, I'm going to try not to look at the screen, because otherwise, for the listeners or viewers, I should say, watching on YouTube, it's just me and you staring down at our laptop.
Oh, yeah, so this is going out on YouTube.
It is, just, but not Steph. So Steph.
Well, in that case, I'm glad I rested, because that angle that you had that's not the angle that was being filmed for YouTube, though, right?
No.
Okay. We're using the studio stuff.
It's very complicated.
But we don't have a feed of Steph in her living room. So whenever Steph speaks, I guess we'll just cut to a wide shot of the two of us just gazing around the room.
Okay.
Which will be pretty scintillating for people on YouTube.
At the World Cup flags.
And the World Cup flags, yeah. So you just get a wide shot of us.
Okay.
You should have got a cardboard cutout of me and put it there.
That would have been our main priority. Yeah.
It would have been.
Of course it.
Do you know what?
Talk about lazy.
You know what we should have done? We absolutely should have had like a little picture of you and have the camera zoom in on like a photo of Steph that we have on the desk and just done that. You know what I might do? I might cut in for the video. When Steph speaks, I might cut in just a picture of Steph. So it cuts to just a picture of you, Steph, just looking at it. In fact, I might screen grab you now. There you go. Okay, I have screen grabbed that picture, and that will be our picture representing Steph for the duration of this podcast. So, yeah, it's going to be epic. Okay, anyway, what were we doing? We were talking about TV shows. What have you been watching, Steph, while sitting in your sweaty kitchen?
Well, oh my God. If we want to talk about hot, right? This heat is nothing compared to my obsession with Off Campus. As Boyd, I know you know I'm obsessed with Off Campus.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Can I just say, I have got a frustrating 10 minutes left of the last episode.
Oh, wow.
And I was trying to watch it before this, but then I had to do a Silo catch up, which was 27 minutes.
Right? Bloody Silo.
Oh my God. Because I was like, I need to understand it. And oh my God, I cannot express how much joy Off Campus is bringing probably everybody who's watching it live.
Yes,
I know Kay's watching it. It's everything about it is brilliant, but the bodies, oh my God.
Oh, I thought you were going to, talk about the witty dialogue.
Yeah, the framing, the direction.
The bold exploration of taboo subjects of assault and domestic violence and abusive relationships.
Steph is here for the abs.
The bodies.
Mm.
Have you got to episode 7 with all the penises? Because let me tell you.
I saw the whole series.
Have you seen the whole thing?
Ago. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yes, there are penises in. Yeah.
It's just like so.
Do you know how they did that scene? Because you'll notice in the penis scene, when they all come into the locker room, strangely, the entire lineup of the team has changed. Have you noticed this?
No.
None of the players.
You've really inspected
with their,
this.
I mean, look, I paused it a few times. I'm not going to tell you. None of the penis owners are members of the team that you are familiar with. They're
really?
All just randoms because apparently they just put a call out for men who were prepared to whip their knobs out on camera. And they came in and became the team for that shot. And then obviously when they're playing, this is regular, it's the regular guys again. Because none of the named actors have their knobs
out. That's hilarious. There is a gratuitous butt shot, though, of what's his name?
Logan.
And that's fair.
Yes, that's
entirely fair. I think you know.
Logan.
Bum shots. I think there's a bum shot of Garrett as well. You're thinking of Dean.
Logan
has the shaggy mane.
I forget all their names.
Dean is the chiselled blonde one. And
Dean's
Garrett
the one who's
the
with
main
Ali.
One.
Yeah, he's the one with Ali. Dean's the one who's having like the thing.
The supposedly non-relationship.
That's right.
He gets his ass out in that scene.
If you had his ass, you would 100% want to get it out.
But what is funny is that you said just now. So we've completely hijacked your what we're
watching. No, go. I love it.
Penis chat trumps all things.
What's funny is I was going to mention this in my thing.
So was I.
Is that because there's a whole article somewhere online about the hairdresser for this show, hair designer for this show. And if you think about it, almost all the main male characters in Off Campus have curly, wavy hair. If you look, and there's not one male character in the show that has like cropped hair or short hair.
Lustrous
manes.
They're
all lustrous. And apparently they took on this very famous Hollywood hair designer, as I'm sure they're called, who wanted all the men to have this lustrous hair. So the casting director went out of her way to find blokes with lush, lavish, wonderful curly hair. For people like me and you,
sure,
is a bit of a kick in the teeth.
It is, but I will say there's some extraordinary hair action in that.
I have 2 points to make about that. Okay, yes. You know my feeling about when they cast people with curly hair, or somebody kind of loses the plot or something, and their hair suddenly becomes curly. Okay, one of the reasons I'm attracted to this is because most of the men have my hair in short form, which is great. And the other reason I think, which I think is really clever, which may or may not be true, but it strikes me about it, is I think it's all juxtaposed with Wellesley's straight hair. You know, she's got very, very straight hair.
Yes, but very thick hair.
Yeah.
Mm. Which, by the way, she spends half her time flicking back, doesn't she?
She does that's it. Pushing it back over her ears. Yeah.
She does it so often.
She almost does it as much as Joey in Dawson's Creek. So.
Oh my God, is that what it is? Is it like a tribute to Joey in Dawson's Creek? If I'd have been directing the show, and I didn't, I would have just hold far a little bit on the pushing back your hair between your
For God's sake, put it up, woman.
Nothing too much in this show. It's so amazing. If you're not watching Off Campus, please do yourself a favor and start watching, because you will not be disappointed.
It has become a phenomenon. Like it is now up there, I think, with Heated Rivalry as like a proper 100%. Pop culture.
Bearing in mind that it is nearly the time of the year for us to do our shows of the year so far list.
Yeah.
And given that of this podcast, at least three, possibly all four of us, are sort of low-key obsessed with the show.
Mm.
I'm saying it might be high on the list.
We deserve it. It's really, really well done.
It's amazing. I love it.
You know, it's...
I'm high-key obsessed. I'm like out there, everything.
But the problem we've got now is that I can now compare it to all other shows of a similar bent. So any teen... we've got one this week, we'll get to
it. Yes, and that's not going to be my problem.
Let's not spoil it this early stage. But I think it is so good off campus. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, this is a real cut above. And it shows you that it doesn't render almost other similar examples of the genre recently in the kind of mediocre vein, just because it's really exposing how you really can make something excellent and original and completely authentic out of this kind of story.
I have not wanted to live in a show this much since The OC.
Mainly because of the abs.
Yeah. You want to be surrounded by abs and willies. That's your whole thing.
It's a cunning genre, isn't it, though, Steph? Whereby it's kind of late teens in this case. Yeah, they're still at college, aren't they?
Late teens, even if some of the actors are pushing 30.
Honestly, 40, some of them. Yeah.
Although, interestingly, while Garrett is, I think, 28, Wellesley is 19.
Is she?
Yeah, oh, so she's the baby of the group.
She is absolutely brilliant, by the way, that actress, whatever the hell her name is. We'll call her Wellesley.
We'll call her Wellesley.
Wellesley, but like everyone else.
I was just about to say something. I had some brilliant point that was.
It was a brilliant point about how they've. I think it was going to be a point about how they've managed to make it for everyone. So you've got the female gaze, and it was that what you were going to say something about?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's like even though it is essentially a teen drama, it goes way beyond the genre, and it doesn't rely on the cliches of that genre. Unlike, say, Happy Years Ever After, or whatever it was called, where it was
every year after,
where it was so predictable, every single element of it. This has a genuine narrative surprises, and it goes down roads you don't expect it to go down, and they work really hard at making it work as an exciting piece of narrative. TV drama.
In the second episode, right, where she goes to tutor him and he's doing weights, right? I was so aflutter. I was out of my mind at that bit where he leans in and then she grabs his neck and I was like, oh my God. And even more than like the out and out, you know, like when they have that like simultaneous orgasm scene and everything like that, which is obviously insane.
The simultaneous orgasm scene. Yeah.
Of course, as all shows do.
But like even that, I was like, the pitch of it is so perfect. I'm like, it just really makes you like not be able to like concentrate on anything else. Oh, I love it. I'm obsessed.
Steph is all of a flutter.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one because people talk about the idea of book boyfriends. You know, this idea that when female writers write novels, often romance novels, often teen novels, they portray men in a very enlightened, emotionally deep and sensitive way.
Wishful thinking,
right. But thus ruining real men for most women, because what they actually want, they don't actually want a boyfriend, they want a book boyfriend. Now, this is a prime example of book boyfriends, but writ large on a screen, because these are essentially male characters written by women for women. Mm. So it's this idealized version of what men should be. And so there's going to be a whole generation of women watching the show who are going to be bitterly disappointed by real-life men.
Rom-coms have been spoiling men, you know, for us for absolute decades. You know what I mean?
It really is.
All films have spoiled, like, any film you ever watch that has any romantic element, you think that a man's going to be like that, and they're just not. Well, maybe some of them are. That's not true.
One or two, here and there.
Yeah.
I wonder if Off Campus will punch through so much generally into pop culture that it might actually have an effect on real men.
What's making me so happy about this is that all four of us are obsessed with it. Like, this has really cut through to everyone, and I don't know there's another show like that.
No, that's what I was saying. It is. That's what I was going to make Teenage Rivalry, because on my social media feeds, like, I watched it a while ago, but it keeps coming up and gets more and more and more. So the algorithm is like, you know, it's because you remember when Heated Rivalry became a thing, and then get like every hour of the day there'll be a new angle on it, a new take on it, something like, as I said, the hairdressing story I read popped up on my Instagram, like, and it's reached that level where that has to satiate, if that's the word, the algorithm
word.
By giving us stories about it every single minute.
It's
of the
definitely
day.
Satiating Steph's algorithm.
That's,
so, oh, you know,
God,
that's
really one way of putting it.
But we should say Ella Bright, of course, who plays Wellesley, but Belmont Camelli, who plays Garrett, he's on the cover of GQ or something. He's done a big interview with GQ, and I think he's talked a lot about his character and the emotional maturity of that character and stuff from there. And I thought that was actually quite an interesting, you know, for other men to read. I thought that was quite an interesting positioning of that character and how he comes across. And the character that actually fascinates me more than him, weirdly, is the character of Dean, who we've kind of mentioned is, like, in any other show would be the really archetypal kind of toxic jock.
He's the blonde one, indeed.
But in this, he's not. He is actually very sensitive and thoughtful. And there are so many lovely beats in this. And season two of this, if it follows the books, I don't know if you read those, but that's going to be the him and Ali season. So,
it's very kind of sex positive, isn't it?
So
you've got like two characters, her best mate, who is called what?
And that's Ali, played by Mika Abdallah.
She's brilliant. She shags around, doesn't give a shit.
There's no slut shaming at all.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah. It's very like...
But her plot is so good, because what happens to her is she's like, oh my God, I'm a serial monogamist. And then she's like, actually, no, I don't want to be a serial monogamist. I want to be able to enjoy sex as a young single woman.
Yeah.
But also I also want to be in love, and I want those to be able
and
to
let's
have
face
those two
it,
things.
Her boyfriend's a bit of a bore.
He's such a bellend. Yeah. That's the ironic
he's
thing.
He's not a bellend.
No, he's a bore, though. Sean. Raging bellend. He's a needy, passive-aggressive twat, and I hated him.
Wow.
And I thought it's quite interesting that, you know,
recognize a little bit of yourself.
The wronged kind of like passive aggressive boyfriend, weirdly, is the, I would say, the one that you like least out of everyone in the show, apart from obviously that hockey player, bad hockey player.
There's a scene where she's splitting up with him, isn't it? And he launches this
so passive aggressive.
I do think you are an absolute C-U-N-T.
When he's the 36 hours thing, hours. Okay.
Yeah, you're like, oh, you smug.
Absolutely.
And it totally backfires. That's really clever, that is. Because you expect it to be fully, again, they're very clever. This is turning into an entire
But it is, and it subverts your expectations every step, which is really nice. And it's really witty, and it's really funny, and it's very charming. And even if, and I think I said this last week, the broad strokes are a little bit trite.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's kind of obvious where it's going. Not always, but sometimes. But you're never disappointed.
No, I've got one more question about it.
Go on.
The hockey, so this hockey thing, obviously, Heated Rivalry was hockey. This is hockey. And there's another hockey book that's being adapted by Netflix that we mentioned last week, the week before.
It's called, like, Cold Storage or something. I forget.
So is there something intrinsically about hockey?
Sexy hockey.
I guess it's like, it could have been soccer, to use the American vernacular.
Yeah,
It could have been another sport, team sport. I'll tell you what it does do. Using the background of team sport as the world in which this is set means that, your love of the body, it makes the bodies seem logically ripped, doesn't it? Because if you're playing team sport in an American college, you have to be pretty fit. So I understand that a sporting background to this story makes total sense. But the fact that there's so much, particularly hockey stories, is just weird.
But what? I think they actually address that. I think they subtly address that in the show when, in I think it's the first episode, Ali's character says it is the only sport where men are applauded for out and out aggression.
Yeah.
And I think what's really clever about this kind of, you know, hockey having its moment, as it absolutely should, is that what it's doing is it's showing these men that get into hockey, and it's such an aggressive sport. It's unbelievably aggressive. They have fights, and you don't on the ice, and it's not something that people like. It's something, it's celebrated. And I think kind of juxtaposing that and then taking the men out of it is actually a really genius idea. It's really clever.
Yeah.
And I think juxtaposing the characters such as they are in this with that inherently almost toxic, very violent sport, more so, as you say, than maybe American football or certainly baseball and whatnot, but it feels like that's a really interesting sort of gear shift. I think it's very effective.
And also, I think you've got to remember that hockey, big sticks.
Yes. Also, the big sticks, two-handing big sticks and puck buddies.
A massive puck.
Yeah, that's another good reason for it.
Yeah,
that was our off-campus spoiler special. We hope you enjoyed it. If you haven't got aboard the off-campus ab train, we highly recommend that you do so. It's airing now on Prime. Prime, incidentally, which is now focusing in two things, dadcore and girlcore. These seem to be their two-pronged approach to dominate the streaming marketplace.
Maybe it's good. At least it's a direction to go in. Two different directions.
Anything else you've been watching, Steph, other than the abs?
Well, I've watched every episode available of something we're reviewing. So,
okay, well, we'll see. So we'll see what happens there. We'll see what happens there. Boydie, other than the football, which I know you've watched a lot of.
I mean, I can't lie. You know, it is the football. I'm afraid right now, James, it is the answer to the question because I have been watching unbelievable amount of football. And it's just...
I've been watching an unbelievable amount of football because at the moment we're two screening in our house. And when I say two screening, I mean the two televisions that we own, one at the back in a little office-y thing and one in the thing are always on, and they've always got, just in case Liam needs to walk through to this, they're always on. I have to say, every time Gary's on, and he's so amazing.
Oh my God, Gary.
Right?
You know,
every time
quite
he's on,
a few
I'm
Garys.
Taking a picture.
You know, there are quite a few Garys.
Lineker or Neville?
Lineker, Neville.
Oh no.
It's another one that I can't remember right now.
Neville is,
it's
Neville
all about
is the
Gary
supreme
Neville for you.
Gary.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Every time he's on, he's so brilliant. Oh God, he's just amazing. I can't stop watching him. He's so good. But anyway, sorry, Boyd. Carry on. You've been watching football.
Have you seen the clip of, because it's him, Gary Neville, Ian Wright, and Roy Keane together.
I watch the overlap on the overlap.
Have you seen the story when Roy Keane and Ian Wright tried to get a milkshake at Shake Shack?
Out of the machine.
Out of the machine. Right. They didn't know how to use the machine. You know, the touch screen thing. You can order. They didn't know how to use it because they're obviously living in a bubble of their own making.
They normally have people to get their milkshakes.
Exactly. That was brilliant.
But also, Did you see the one? Sorry, James, we're going to stop in a minute. But did you see there's a bit where they're talking about where Gary Neville's saying that he went through a really bad period of play because he was breaking up with a girlfriend.
Yeah. And really Roy Keane
doesn't care. And I was like, who would ever dump Gary Neville? Yeah. I mean, why would you do that?
Roy Keane also saying, does that mean you can't intercept a cross?
Stop crosses,
fantastic. But we're recording this the day after the, admittedly, slightly boring England game that was 0-0 and was disappointing against Ghana, James. You were busy at the Supergirl screening.
I was at the Supergirl screening.
We were talking before we started a recording that pop culture nerds have divided last night into those who went to the Supergirl screening, to which I was invited, and people who stayed at home to watch the football. Anyway, all I will say is, I know you find it offensive to talk about football, but this is already, as we're into, you know, like the second week or, you know, nearly the third week, I can't remember how many games there have been already. It's a brilliant, brilliant World Cup. This is, isn't it? Like, it's just, there's so much to sink your teeth into. So many incredible goals, so many individual star players who are playing out of their skin and scoring extraordinary numbers of goals. Messi, Ronaldo.
Oh my God. What a beautiful moment. Beautiful moment. He scored, so James, in case you don't know, right, Messi's a football player. He's the top goal scorer ever in a World Cup.
Anyway, what I'm saying is, in general, as a festival of football and of culture, it is brilliant. And all the things that we were worried about, which were things like ticket sales, because the ticket prices are exorbitant and it's outrageous and FIFA are disgusting and all of that, and all of the issues, like there's the water breaks after a quarter of an hour.
Hydration
breaks. There's loads of
issues. I mean,
that
seems sensible.
Well, indeed.
No,
but then,
it's
an advertising ploy. Anyway, ignoring all of that, it's just been brilliant. It's been so exciting. It's been so interesting. So it just underlies how the World Cup is, I'm afraid, every 4 years, one of the greatest show on earth. And at this point, I can't watch much other TV. I will say, I'm nearly getting there with Paradise. So I've nearly finished Paradise in between. Six months later, but in I would say in at least a couple of weeks' time, can do a Paradise spoiler special, which the whole world has been waiting for.
By the time you finish that, we'll all be living in a bunker under the earth.
You sounded like a grumpy old man there. And the other show I wanted to mention, because if you only listen to, do you think people only listen to Pilot Plus now? If you don't listen to Pilot Plus, you will know that we, James and I, disagreed violently over the Larry David show, Life Larry.
Did we disagree violently? Because I feel like you liked it. I told you how much
you
I hated it. At which point you went, yeah, I can kind of see your point. Makes sense.
Yeah, I understand. But I still disagree. I love it and you hate it. That is the divide. I can understand why you love it.
Yes. I definitely didn't love it. I see what you tried to do there. You tried to use some Jedi mind trick on me. It's not going to work.
It was a mistake. I can understand why. Have you watched it yet, Steph?
No, I haven't watched it because I've been deep into watching the loads of wonderful shows. Yeah,
anyway, I absolutely loved it. But it really is for like hardcore Larry David obsessives.
I will love it because I love, he can do no wrong in my eyes.
It is massively flawed. It's indulgent, et cetera, et cetera. But I absolutely loved it. And I watched even more of it, unbelievably, last night. So I've nearly finished the 7-episode feast of comedy that it is.
What did Kay think?
She liked it.
She had issues with it as well.
She seemed to like it, though. I found it aggressively unfunny and it made me furious.
I absolutely hated
it.
You hate Curb.
Isn't for me, but this was a sketch show, although controversially a sketch show where they decided not to put in jokes, which I thought was a bold move, and yet here we are.
Anyway, I actually do what I think it's probably going to get slammed by critics. I think reviews will come out, I think today probably. So it'll be interesting to read them, but I still absolutely flat out loved it. It's just to see Larry on screen again. And by the way, there's as I said in our review, there's one scene where he plays this old Jewish woman and he's in full drag and it's hilarious on its own.
Oh my God.
Just the sight of him doing that is hilarious. There you go. Yeah, that's what I've been watching.
Fabulous.
What have you been watching, James?
Well, I was forced to watch that, but luckily only a short amount of it. What else have I been watching? I mean, the main thing, and I'm not going to talk about it again, was Off Campus. And I will say I was genuinely, when I finished it, I was bereft. Genuinely bereft. Like, I could have absolutely mainlined another 10 episodes of that. I enjoyed it enormously. So there was that. What else did I watch this week? I watched an awful lot of the other shows that we will be reviewing later on, of course, which we're going to talk about. And in addition to that, I have commenced a return to Spider-Noir. So Spider-Noir, when we watched it, Empire gave it, Alex Godfrey at Empire gave it 5 stars.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was decent, but I didn't love it when I started there. But I've been meaning to go back to it because, you know, he said it's like transcendental, like it's fantastic. And obviously I've abandoned watching the ridiculous colour version. I'm now only watching it in the intended black and white. And I am enjoying it more. Like, it is actually pretty engrossing and it has that real old school hard-boiled sensibility without the overly distracting voiceover that Sugar has. So I'm enjoying it more, but I'm still not like blown away by it. I've got a couple left to go. We'll see how I feel at the end of it. But yeah, I'm definitely enjoying it. But it hasn't changed my life, is what I'm saying.
Can you sum up for me why Alex thought it was so amazing?
I mean, he probably sums it up over about 600 words in his review.
Oh, I know, but I haven't been bothered.
I don't have it to hand, actually, but if, do you know what? I'm going to bring it up now.
I don't think I'm going back to it. I don't think I'm going to do it.
No, you're not.
Me neither, no. Unless this manages to convince me. No.
Yeah, okay, go on.
Alex says, I'm just going to read you the last paragraph of his review. It's a miracle that all of this works so well together, and it is full of surprises. One later episode, outstandingly titled Nightmare on a Gurney, serves up hallucinatory Bunwellian.
Oh, yeah, oh, Bunwellian, he's gone for
Jesus
it.
Yeah. Christ.
Brilliant.
Serves up hallucinatory Bunwellian stuff, going psychologically and biologically deeper than any Spider-Man outing has. It just gets better and better with a rug-pulling season finale that delivers on every level, with Nicolas Cage in the middle of it all, fulfilling a lifelong dream he possibly didn't know he had, with every pore of his body, every restless fizzy atom of his being. And then the verdict is a big swing. Oh, yes, that pays off from start to finish. This is an irresistible concoction, an utterly insane stew that somehow makes perfect sense. It is total joy.
Just emailing Sue's Corner right now.
What?
No, fair enough. It's quite convincing. He's very excited about it, isn't he? Bunwellian.
Yeah, but he said he was very, very excited by the show. Yeah, like, it really was. I think it's his show of the year.
Show of the year?
Oh, yeah, he's obsessed with it.
I mean, he's given it a full five stars. He's gone full on.
I'm not there yet, but I haven't got to Nightmare on a Gurney yet. So, you know, maybe that'll turn me around.
Has Empire reviewed Off Campus yet?
I don't think we did a review of Off Campus, no.
Maybe it's time to...
Rock up a five-star review of Off Campus. Yeah. I'll go in. Off Campus is a Bunwellian, psychologically, biologically deep show that forefronts the female gaze. It is total joy. That's what I'm going to write. Yeah?
Do it.
I'll do it. All right, fine. That is what we've been watching this week. Shall we move on to a listener question?
Please, God.
Let's do it. Okay. We have a question here from Carmen, and Carmen says, Hi, Pod Team. Sorry in advance for the slightly long, rambling email. Don't worry. A whole podcast is slightly long and rambling. having gotten to the end of a crappy day of surgery and hospitals, I camped out in bed and turned on my go-to, most comforting episode of TV, which is Season 4, Episode 1 of Buffy, The Freshman, now famed as the one with Pedro Pascal. True story. I won't ask about comfort watches, as I think we all pretty much know where you three would land. So instead, I wanted to ask about small characters that you wish had gotten more time. For me, the character of Summer, who appears in The Freshman, is such a great foil for Buffy and so much fun to spend time with. I feel that she could have made a great big bad and way better than the charisma hole that was Adam. So true. I also feel like the Supremes from The West Wing almost write their own spin-off show. Hard agree. Anyone else you would put forward? Also, just wanted to say a massive thank you. I saved up a few episodes to keep me company and distracted through this singularly unfun day, and can honestly say that your familiar, friendly, and funny banter really did help me get through it.
Oh, what's the lady's name?
This is Carmen.
Oh, Carmen, I hope you're all right. Oh, poor Carmen.
I agree very much with both of those, because you remember, like I said, The Freshman was the one where Buffy goes to university, and the whole point of that first episode is like a metaphor for leaving school and going to college, where she feels out of her depth, and she's somehow the vampires are kicking her ass, and it's a whole thing, and Summer's the vampire who ultimately kicks her ass. And that is a good character. And the Supremes, that West Wing episode of the Supremes with the mighty Glenn Close, Steph, that 100% feels like it could have been a Supreme Court spin-off
show. I love the way you stealth talked about West Wing.
I did not bring it up. She opened the door. I simply walked through it.
To be fair, Carmen did open that door.
Yeah,
okay. But he's picked the question, hasn't he?
That's true.
I mean, fair enough for Carmen to get.
I think those are great choices.
I've done a K and I've only picked one choice.
Lazy.
Because I'm
my head's in a spin because of the football.
Heat.
And the heat.
Oh, football.
And everything.
And Steph's in a spin because of the abs.
Exactly, for the abs. We're all in a spin because of off campus.
Not just the abs, guys.
Not just the abs.
We're all in an off campus spin. I'm going to go for Doctor Who, the episode Blink, which is some many people the best episode of all time. There's something up there.
Great episode.
And that, not only did the Doctor and Freeman Agyeman's character, the then companion, not appear at all, hardly except on
one scene, isn't it,
on a TV screen. But the whole episode is about the character Sally Sparrow, played by Kerry Mulligan, brilliantly. This is Kerry Mulligan pre-Hollywood fame.
Before she was Kerry Mulligan.
And she's obviously brilliant and brilliantly cast. And I think I wasn't alone. I remember when it went out, I was thinking, oh, they've introduced a whole new character, built this entire episode around her, which she's about to become a new companion. And she just didn't. She's just
never
in this one.
Again.
I've never seen her again. So it's Sally Sparrow for me, because she's absolutely brilliant in an absolutely phenomenal episode. And the character's intriguing, and yet it's just a one and done. It's absolutely, and I think Stephen Moffat, I'm pretty sure I remembered him saying that he intended to go back to the character, but she became too famous too quickly.
Mm.
And literally, I think within 6 months of this episode going out,
was that the same year that An Education came out?
Exactly.
Yeah, and then she was
real.
Then she was massive.
Yeah, because she's so brilliant in it. It's all about Sally Sparrow for me.
Oh, is it? I think I've got this question wrong. Is it about individual episodes they're in? Because I've just.
Characters who we feel should have had more screen time.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say, and Boyd, you might say, oh no, I think he was used just the right amount. I'm going to say when Jerry Stiller as Frank Costanza in Seinfeld, because I love Jerry Stiller, and I know I say it a lot. King of Queens is one of my favourite sitcoms, and obviously he plays the dad in King of Queens, but I love him as Frank Costanza in Seinfeld.
Oh yeah, no, I'm banned from talking about Seinfeld, so I couldn't use that example,
yeah,
but you aren't banned, and you're right, of course, yeah.
He's amazing, he's absolutely amazing. He's a comedy genius, is Jerry Stiller. And the other people that I think were really good, I love the character of Laura Montez in Veep. Do you remember she was like a kind of, she was a sort of a bit of an arch nemesis. You don't even remember her, but she's a great character. Laura Montez.
Is that the name of the character or the actress?
Yes.
Oh, who played her?
The character.
Do you know who played her? Sorry.
I'll find out. Anyway, she's a great character, underused. I think that could have been fleshed out a bit more. And then one for you, James. And now this is, I know. I wonder if you're going to agree with me about this. I think people either think he was used exactly the right amount, or they think, oh no, he should have had more airtime. Gunther. In Friends.
I think he was used exactly the right amount.
I agree with that. Right.
Okay.
I love that he got that role simply because he knew how to work a coffee machine. Like, he was an extra. He was just in for the day. And they just said, does anyone know how to work the coffee machine? And he was like, oh, I've got barista experience. I could do it. So they put him behind the counter. And then he got a line. And then he became a recurring character. And then he earned enough money from that. I think, like, so he basically made an acting career out of just being able to work a coffee machine. His one regret, he said, was that when he did that extras gig, he had peroxide bleached his hair, which is not naturally that colour. But he then had to keep his hair like that.
Oh, God.
Because he had then a recurring bit where he appeared on Friends.
Partly so memorable.
Right, but tragically, he did actually die not long after the Friends reunion, because he appeared briefly on that. I think he was ill at the time. He appeared on like a video screen, like he dialed in and spoke to them at the reunion. But yeah, unfortunately, he died.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, his name was James Michael Taylor, was the actor's name.
Oh.
Obviously, as is my wont, I have at least 20 possible options for this.
Yeah.
So let's get into them. Okay, on my list I have got...
Oh, God.
Carmen brought up Pedro Pascal, who, of course, appears in The Freshman in Buffy. But also, I would say his character, Oberyn Martell, the Red Viper of Dawn from Game of Thrones, was a great character. Has that amazing episode, The Mountain and the Viper, but gets, spoiler, murderized by the mountain. Necessary to the plot that he dies, but there's a part of me that would love to have seen more of him, because when he and Indira Varma kind of first turn up, they are fantastic in that. Mm. So I really, really like that character.
When he literally grapefruits his head.
Yes.
Oh my God.
It's pretty great.
It's one of the best episodes of Game of Thrones.
Well, because you think he's won as well. Like,
he's spinning around.
Yeah.
And you think the little skippy guy's winning. Yeah. It's going to be amazing. And then at the last minute, he makes that fatal mistake.
It's true. Ugh. It's so good, that is. Alfie Solomons from Peaky Blinders is one of the best characters. Tom Hardy's
character in Peaky Blinders,
who I think is magnificent. You know, Stephen Knight might disagree. I imagine he is not the most easy person to work with. However, he is a delight when he is on screen. So I would love to have seen more from that character. Here's one for the Star Trek fans out there. Garak from Deep Space Nine, the Cardassian tailor and former member of the Obsidian Order, sort of spy. Literally, I don't know if he's a tinker or a soldier, but he's definitely a tailor and a spy. I think he's really, really good. And I don't think he got, I mean, he got a few episodes to himself, but I don't think he got anywhere near the screen time that he deserved. So Garak is up there for me. If I were to pick a West Wing person, it would be Ainsley Hayes, Emily Proctor's character, as the Republican legal counsel, who was fantabulous. And ultimately, well, the West Wing lost her to CSI Miami because Aaron Sorkin never made her a series regular. She was always a guest star. And obviously she needed money to live and work. So when she was offered a steady gig on CSI Miami, she took that. And it was a real shame. And when I interviewed Aaron Sorkin for my mahoosive West Wing piece, he said his biggest regret was not making her a series regular and actually locking her down, because he would love to have kept her in the show, but he didn't. So that was on him. Who else have I got in here? I would say, Walton Goggins in Sons of Anarchy. Walton Goggins plays a trans sex worker called Venus Van Damme, which is actually a riff on Cletus Van Damme, which was one of his characters in the Shield's aliases. And this came out of a thing where Kurt Sutter, who was the showrunner on Sons of Anarchy, was one of the main writers on the Shield. And he basically said, because loads of people from the Shield turn up in Sons of Anarchy, and his whole thing was, well, I can have loads of people from the Shield, but I can never have Walton Goggins and I can never have Michael Chiklis, because they are so synonymous with their characters, no one would believe them as new people. And so Walton Goggins suggested, kind of in jest, what if I played a trans character? And then a while down the line, Kurt Sutter was like, were you serious? Because I've written you this part. And he read it, and he was like, this is amazing. Like, absolutely. So he plays this phenomenal character, Venus Van Damme. It's in it for quite a few episodes. In fact, I spoke to him on set of Sons of Anakin when he was playing that character as well, which is great. And Michael Chiklis, to be fair, does finally appear in the very last episode. Do you remember this, Steph? Of Sons of Anakin as the truck driver, a very pivotal truck driver. That's Michael Chiklis. But that's a good character. I would have liked to see more. Michael K. Williams' character, Omar Little in The Wire. Obviously, Michael K. Williams is no longer with us, but that character was one of the best characters in The Wire and had a very small role. So I would like to see more of that. I had a bunch of other ones, like Saffron from Firefly, which was Christina Hendricks. She's in the Our Mrs. Reynolds episode. She's really, really good in that. She could have had a spin-off. The character of Faith in Buffy, fabulous character, doesn't get enough screen time. Badger and Skinny Pete from Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
Great characters who we don't see nearly enough of. And so it goes on, but I will stop there because I can feel, even though she's not here, I can feel Kay's eyes boring into my skull as I'm boring everyone else.
No, I'm giving you an absolute A star for that homework assignment, because that was extensive. That was like James Wikipedia.
Thank you.
That was incredible. Thank you. Well done.
I try to bring value where I can.
Yes, and you have.
Well, Carmen, I hope that has answered your question. And in response to your PS, which was a follow-up to my 50... Remember when you did the 50 questions on
Pilot
Pass?
Yes.
50 questions.
And you asked me to pick a song, and I picked Black by Pearl Jam. And she's asked, would I choose the album version of Black or the MTV Live version, which is the unplugged version? And that's a really good question, because they have very different energies, so I would pick both. So
that's not an answer. You can't... No, pick one.
I can't possibly pick one. Well, it would have to be the album one, because that's the one that I've listened to the most. But the MTV Unplugged one is singular as well.
I pushed him for you, Carmen, there. I pushed him for you because it was outrageous.
You've made me. I also really like some of the, you know, the live stadium versions they've done of that particular song. But anyway, that is a song that absolutely destroys you. That's a lay flat on the ground and die song. If you would like your question eviscerated such as that on this particular podcast, or you wish to submit your thoughts, fears and dreams to Pilot Plus, please submit them to us at postbag@pilottvpod.com. And while I have you here, and I mentioned this on Pilot Plus on Thursday, so I'm going to do it in brief here. Empire Spoiler Specials are becoming Empire Plus, which gives you things other than spoilers, new things, but it also is going to give you an ad-free access to the regular podcast, which I know people have been asking for. There'll be longer cuts of the podcast, so it's a more interesting and varied proposition for Spoiler Specials as Empire Plus. In addition to that, there will also be, unfortunately, a price rise for Pilot Plus. Pilot Plus listeners already know this, but if you are thinking of signing up to Pilot Plus, and if you're not, then why haven't you? Now is the time to do it, because the prices are going to go up on the 27th of July. So you have until then to lock in a year of Pilot Plus at the lower price, which you can do now. And if you're a Spoiler Special subscriber, you can lock in a year on Spoiler Specials, or rather Empire Plus as it is now. You can lock that in now for 12 months as well. When the prices do go up on the 27th, the monthly price goes up, I think, by £1 a month. The annual one only goes up by a small amount, so actually that becomes better value. And there's also going to be a bundle offer, so you can get Pilot Plus and Empire Plus for one single fee as well. Obviously, it's not fun. We don't like to increase prices. We wouldn't do it unless we were basically being forced to, but here we are. But it is hopefully still great value for money, and I would say it is still cheaper than, I don't know, a bumper family pack of Monster Munch. So, well worth your money, I'm saying. Anyway, that is our little bit of housekeeping. It is time now, I think, to move on to this week's news. And we should probably begin with two cancellations. Two shows have been cancelled. Oh. Netflix have axed The Burrows.
Yes.
So, OAP Stranger Things is no more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is a surprise, I think, because it got really good reviews. We liked it. I really liked it. But, yeah, and it was in, I'm sure it was in the top 10, like, first week.
Yeah.
But they're
ruthless.
They haven't been ruthless, have they, recently? I think this is the most high-profile cancellation for a while, I would say, especially because it's from the Duffer Brothers, etc. And I have seen speculation that it's partly to do with their relationship with the Duffer Brothers.
I don't know if that's speculation. Trouble in Paradise.
Maybe.
Oh, sorry, you probably find the word paradise quite triggering, because, you know, I know it's taken you a long time to get through that series, so I apologise for that.
Very good, yes.
The other thing that's been cancelled is Ponies. Great reviews on Peacock. Yeah, it got really good reviews. I thought.
Oh, okay.
I said great. I'm now going to check. Maybe they were middling. I don't know.
I think when we reviewed it, I didn't love it.
No, you didn't. I liked it more than both of you. 76 on Metacritic. So good reviews rather than great. But yeah, I thought that was definitely going to get a second season. So I'm rather surprised that didn't.
It doesn't surprise me at all. I thought it was mid, very mid.
Really?
I didn't think it was mid. I thought it was low.
Less than mid.
Wow, this is harsh. I thought it was really fun. Okay.
Yeah, but I'd been started watching Star City, and so that was kind of my...
Yeah,
like,
it's no Star City, obviously. That's much, much, much better. But, okay, fine. Well, I was slightly disappointed that got cancelled, but clearly neither of you care, and you are dancing on its grave.
Hold on a minute. I think you're compromised because you met Emilia Clarke.
Do you think that's the reason?
Obviously. Yeah, because...
She sat where Boyd is sitting even as we speak.
Yes.
We had a good old chat.
Yes, you are completely...
Do you think it was the glow of Emilia Clarke?
You're totally in the pocket of
Clarke. In the pocket of Big Clarke.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
maybe that's true.
Yeah, dazzled. Dazzled by her presence.
Okay, fine. I'm compromised. I'm so sorry. Anyway, it's been cancelled, so, you know, is what it is.
Absolutely.
Okay, you know Nick Mohammed. This is kind of a kiddie story, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Nick Mohammed as Nathan from Ted Lasso, okay? So continuing his redemption arc into the real world, right? He is going to be working with BBC to turn his Young Magicians books into an animated series. So Nathan is fully back and he's nice and he's doing nice things for children now. So it's all good. Everything's fine.
Okay, that is
good.
But
Nick Mohammed news, nonetheless.
Nick Mohammed is a legend, yeah.
He is
a legend. Well, I was going to mention in Netflix good news. So you had on the downside, they axed those two. Well, the axed one show. Sorry, Ponies was it?
Ponies was Peacock.
Peacock,
yeah.
But I want to break the entirely not surprising news. But if you're wondering why Harlan Coben books get turned into Netflix shows so consistently and why there are so many of them, I can reveal to you that I will find you the latest, which we reviewed last week, on Plus, or do we do in Plus or the
it
regular
was on
pod?
Plus.
On
yeah.
Plus, yeah. Mm. I will find you NAB's 24 million views in 4 days, and it's Netflix's biggest new series debut of the year already. And I think it's just people can't get enough of this stuff.
It is
very compelling.
It's so compelling. Mm. The stories are so compelling. The characters are so recognisable. It's just they're just exciting. You need to know what happens next. They're very addictive. It's not going to stop because this is a success machine.
Do you think
Colin
that if
Coben.
You were to if you were to harness the dramatic reveals and mystery and compelling story of a Harlan Coben and put in, you know, the detailed emotional characters and willies of Off Campus, you would have the perfect TV show that would bring in all audiences.
Maybe. I mean, he's got his own YA strand, so he just needs to maybe, you know, sexify. So
sex it up.
Sex it up.
What's his YA strand? What do you mean? What's his YA strand?
He did a show for Prime Video called Shelter.
Video.
Which was white, very YA, young people play young Mickey Bolitar, who's another character.
Yeah, because the Mickey Bolitar books are his YA books, which is the son of Myron Bolitar,
exactly.
His detective.
And they've been turned into a TV show separately for Netflix, I believe. But yeah, he did do a YA, Shelter was YA, and it was pretty, it was fun. It was fun. But it definitely wasn't full on penises like
Off campus.
Off campus.
Yes.
Well, the immersive experience of this particular Harlan Coben, I will find you, right? I came downstairs and Liam was like, he's not in the back of that car. He's not in there. And I was like, what are you doing? And he's literally talking to the TV. And then I said, what are you doing? He said, they think he's in there, but he's definitely not in there. He's miles away. And I was like, okay, I don't know what's happening, but you get so immersed in it because this one's really kind of because obviously it's not a spoiler, I don't think, to say that he breaks out of prison. We know that he breaks out of prison because it's kind of the
premise
of the thing.
I've already spoiled
that, yeah. It's kind of the premise of the thing. And I think that brings a level of excitement that you feel like you can be fully immersed into it. Immersed into it, totally. Yeah. as much as you can be with the bodies and body parts of those lovely men and women and off campus, I would say.
Indeed, yes. Steph is slightly obsessed.
I'm so hot.
you're so hot right now.
Is hot under the collar, Steph, I believe.
You're telling us how hot you are, like the cast of Off Campus.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
They too are hot. I see what you did there. Yeah. It's a connection.
You're hot and you're hot. Has anyone watched the trailer for the new Ricky Gervais project, Alley Cats, which is an animated series of a bunch of cats chatting shit to each other?
Right.
And in the trailer, you will see... And it's basically he uses his cast members from Afterlife, particularly Tom Basden, David Earl, Kerry Godleman, Joe Hartley, Diane Morgan, Tony Way. They're all cast members. You'll recognise their voices from Afterlife, and this uses their voices in these characters, these cat characters. We will be talking to Ricky soon for the podcast, so I'm excited. There's so much to discuss. For me, the most immediate question is, why do an animated sitcom about cats when you love dogs even more?
Talked about this so much, right? He loves dogs, but he's got cats, hasn't he?
Yes, but the only reason he hasn't got dog is because he's away so much.
Yes.
That doesn't mean you can't do an animated series about them.
No, right? But I think the reason why is because cats... Okay, I want all the cat lovers to stand down.
Oh, God.
There we go.
Oh, God. Cats. Steph is on the cusp of cancellation. Yeah.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying I think cats are more crafty and they're a little bit more, you know, they can get away with saying snarky things in the way that you don't get snarky dogs. Do you know what I mean? But cats,
maybe
you do,
that's a good
I think.
Theory. I like the theory. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
Also, I tell you what.
I don't know. Jack Russells are quite snarky. I can tell.
Really? Mm. Jack Russells? God, yeah. You've got a thing.
It's a compliment. I'm not dissing Jack Russells. I'm just saying they have an inherent snark.
Maybe. Yeah, but that's because they're ratters and they're constantly, like, they're as ratters, so they're constantly looking for
all
rats.
All right, Mrs. Croft.
They have a snarky bark.
Yeah. I used to have, you know, one that was like half Jack Russell. But yeah, I think that is it. And I just want to say, if there was one famous person whose voice I could listen to, if I could only listen to one famous person's voice for the rest of my life, it would be Diane Morgan. I love her voice.
Oh, yeah.
I cannot get enough
of that
woman.
Her new series starts soon, in a few weeks.
Does it?
The one about the robot, which looks absolutely hilarious. Yeah.
Can't wait.
Very excited about that. Yeah. But anything Diane Morgan does is gold.
If you two could only listen to one famous person's voice for the rest of your life.
Oh my God, what question?
What voice would that be?
Patrick Stewart.
I knew you were going to say Patrick Stewart.
It's Patrick Stewart. He has a delightful speaking voice.
God, I have to think. I don't know.
We're going to come back to you.
Yeah, what's yours then?
Gary Neville.
No, mine's Diane Morgan. Said to you, oh my God, that sentence happened like 3 seconds ago.
Yeah, no, I was listening. I just forgot that's what queued up this whole topic.
I still think you're lying and I think it's Gary Neville. Anyway.
I do love Gary Neville.
Do we have any other news? Not a lot has happened, to be fair, since last week's podcast.
When you say that, but what you really mean is you haven't looked up what's happened.
That is accurate.
Yeah. I've got one funny news story. My occasional funny... headline stories.
Oh, I love this. Yeah, it's a variety headline.
Yeah, it's a variety headline. Here we go. House of the Dragon star Olivia Cooke reveals, quotes, really bad audition for Rey in Star Wars The Force Awakens, I was shit.
Oh my God. Do you know what I didn't know that I found out Star Wars related?
Go on.
I don't know if anyone else, are you guys all watching Cape Fear still?
Yes.
People are loving Cape Fear.
Yes.
Okay, people are loving Cape Fear. Obviously, Amy Adams is in Cape Fear. And I didn't realise that she was joining the Star Wars. I know this is not TV, but it kind of is because Star Wars is TV now.
She's in Starfighter.
I didn't know she was in Starfighter. I was so excited.
Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah. Well, it's kind of, mine's kind of half film, half TV, but yeah. So yeah, Olivia could have been Rey if she hadn't have been shit in the audition.
Well, given that we've moved on to film news at this point, I'm suggesting that news is
on,
over.
No. Can I just make one more point in news? Okay. So there are so many crazy headlines about House of the Dragon. Right. Somebody pulled me up on this, right? Okay, because someone pulled me up in the comments where they so love to pull me up, which was something about me saying the House of the Dragon, House of Dragons, and House of the Dragon. Someone was annoyed that I couldn't get it right.
That is true.
But it is hard when it's this hot. There's been such a sustained heat. Okay, but I'm going to start calling it HOD, right? There's been a lot of headlines about HOD.
HOD, not to be confused with FAM.
Yeah. And the kiss and all of these. But people are going wild about this season. Have any of you seen any of these?
Yeah, there have been some absolutely superlative, like, five-star reviews of the new season of House of the Dragon. So our review actually felt quite muted by comparison, even though I loved it. But boy, you are pissing all over House of the Dragon chips a little bit, I think so.
That's unfair. No, I love episode 2 more than episode 1. So by the time this goes out, episode 2 will have gone out and everyone can see how it's even better than episode 1. I just don't, we'll repeat ourselves.
You got stuck on the Battle of the Gullet.
I got so the gullet did not go down. For me, or whatever. I just much prefer the talkier. Actually, there's amazing sequences there's fighting and all sorts, and bloodletting of all kinds in episode 2. I just think episode 2 is even better than episode 1. Episode 1's absolutely great. And it was all to do with the creator calling it the maddest thing on TV ever.
I think he really rubbed you up the wrong way with that, didn't he? He's like, it's the maddest episode of TV ever. Yeah. And Boydie's like, fuck that. So.
Yeah. I'm like, actually, the maddest episode of TV ever is Life, Larry, and the Pursuit of Happiness. I think we can all agree.
I'll agree with you next week when I've watched it.
Yeah, I wish a dragon had set that on fire. Anyway, let's move on to this week's reviews. And first up this week, we have The Bear Season 5, the final season of The Bear, picking up after the surprise episode Gary, which we got a few weeks ago. And this is the last hurrah for Sid, Carmi, Richie and the gang. And it has, I think it's fair to say, a slightly different flavour to the previous seasons, as this entire 8-episode season takes place in real time, or close enough to it. It's like 24 meets Kitchen Stories. this is one afternoon and evening at The Bear, what may in fact be the final evening before they're forced to close. Now, needless to say, everything that can go wrong pretty much does. There are delicious meals being prepared, as you would expect. There are on-point needle drops and at least one fac brother falling through the ceiling. Boydie, how many Michelin stars would you give this final season of The Bear? I should say that we have been issued with 7 of the 8 episodes. Yeah. Christopher Storer has kept the 8th final episode under lock and keys. We've not seen the finale, but I, for one, have seen all 7. I'm sensing Steph has seen all 7.
Oh,
Boydie,
absolutely.
Have you seen all 7 or are you lazy?
I haven't seen all 7.
Lazy it is.
World Cup. World Cup.
I've seen 4 though, and it becomes increasingly clear because I hadn't read anywhere about the format of this final season. But as you watch it, episode, you realise, they're telling this in real time, and it's quite extraordinary to watch it play out. And the fact that not only has Carmi essentially lumbered his poor colleagues and sister with the running of this fucking nightmare Cordon Bleu haute cuisine eatery that he's created, and he's just decided to walk away essentially, but still work with them and help them in their hour of need, and at the same time they're all trying to get the fucking restaurant back on board, considering there's the mother of all storms that attacks Chicago and leads to this drains being blocked, there's fags in the drains and there's pipes burst and there's shit everywhere, and it's a complete, on top of everything they have to face,
I had issues about the sanitation of all that. I was like, this feels like a health and safety hazard.
Yeah, what is that stuff?
Can you still open a restaurant if there are feces spraying out of the wall? Like, I'm not sure you can.
Exactly. And so while all this is happening, they're carrying on regardless. Like, we've just got to deal with, we'll just ignore the fact there's...
Yes, but that is the cinematic visual representation of what is going on in their minds, guys. That's what that rain is.
I get it. Right, unsubtle. Okay. I mean, I think the storm, the wild one storm, which they keep showing the shot of the city, the skyline with the storm happening, is unsubtle a metaphor enough?
When they do the cigarettes down the drain,
They
uncover that it's the cigarettes blocking the drain.
Yes.
That's Carmi's cigarettes. And
of course.
I feel like you're not saying all the right nice things about it. Okay, I'm going to let you carry on.
I haven't even got there yet. I'm just explaining the milieu that we're in, the backdrop.
Stand down. I'm going to blame the heat again.
Don't get carried away. It's fine. But it is immediately... No, you're completely reminded how brilliant the storytelling in this show is. The characters are all so fascinating and three-dimensional and interesting. I love the fact that the sister, Natalie, has dropped her kid off with the mum, Jamie Lee Curtis, but she's monitoring it because she does not trust Jamie Lee Curtis not to be a complete psycho. And she's like, are you going to be weird? And she's listening in to make sure she can monitor that whilst trying to help with this... opening the restaurant, despite of all the incredible number of things that are in the way, problems that are in their way. I just, to be back with these characters is brilliant. I think it's fantastically well done. The needle drops are amazing as ever. It looks brilliant. Just the attention to detail of the show itself mirrors the attention to detail that the chefs have when they're making the food. So there's all these like brilliant moments when the food is being cooked up that you're like, oh, this is truly how it would work in a five-star Michelin, three-star Michelin. How many Michelin stars can you get? Three, I think, is the maximum, isn't it?
I think so. We need a number crunch there.
I think it's three stars.
Do you think they give the stars to the restaurants after they eat? There is a preview of what they think the restaurant will be like before they eat there.
Listeners, Steph, that was a snarky in-joke there.
Star
ratings in Heat. Yeah, very good. You know, there's a whole book coming out, written by my friend Ben G. Wilson.
Okay.
Ben G. Wilson, about star ratings, the history of star ratings.
Cool.
And it's called Rate This Book. And it literally tells you the whole story of how the whole idea of rating stuff has explores the whole history of it going back like thousands of years, I think, to like Roman times when they had it's really interesting. So it's a whole subject there,
okay,
James, that we can address.
Noted.
Another time. But I know, I loved it. It's fucking brilliant. And it's like, it's just intense. The tension of this whole final season is brilliant because you really want them, you're really rooting for everyone involved to kind of somehow pull off this rescue of this fucking restaurant that is an absolute disaster zone. And it's just fantastically well done. So no, I absolutely loved it, Steph, just to calm all your fears.
Really good.
To
calm all your fears, exactly.
I really set upon you there, didn't
you?
I wasn't going my way.
I think like I was, like James said, you're like, what is happening with this stuff spewing out of the pipes? Like, how they and they almost like just kind of just carry on regardless, particularly Richie. He's like, Richie's just going to do whatever needs to be done.
And Richie's going through his like Zen era.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which in his case involves just plowing on and just completely ignoring all negative issues that are happening as we speak. Carry on, Steph.
Right. So this. I've always loved the bear, and I think I was absolutely incensed that we didn't, because I watched all 7 episodes in one evening.
Right? As you should, because they're not long. They're short. Half of them are like 25 minutes each.
Or even less.
Do yourself a favour and watch it in one sitting, because I think that experience for me was, oh God, it was just divine. I was so upset we didn't get, but it was okay because the end of episode 7 kind of finishes on a, we're going to wrap everything up in the next episode.
Yeah.
So it's okay. The shift ends, should we say. It sets the
table for the finale.
Exactly. So, right, things that I love about this, apart from absolutely everything, the cinematography in these episodes is stunning. It is absolutely stunning. I love everybody has come back and they're all questioning themselves, because remember when we left in season 4, we leave them outside at the back of the restaurant. He tells Sid, you're the bear. And then that's the secret they're keeping and they haven't told the rest of the staff. And that unravels in this. I love them navigating these individual challenges together, because even though they're so siloed in their individual personal growth, they have to come together in this episode at certain points, which is such an interesting dynamic the whole way. How Carmi is trying to sit in his new position of like, I don't want to be an arsehole anymore. I don't know if this is my passion anymore. God, it's just so layered. The characters are just incredible. Yeah, I love Ao. She's an absolute MVP in this whole thing for me. I don't know how. I don't know. Her character cannot be bettered. She's brilliant in this. And obviously she is still very much in love with cooking, very much in love with being a chef. But should she take over? You know, all of these questions, and you're just living every minute because it's done so cleverly like this. You're living every minute with them. And I love Richie's character. There's also really interesting shift in one of the characters, Marcus, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but I think that is something that I didn't see coming, which I thought was
Will Poulter is still on hand, which is great.
Marcus and Will Poulter. What's Will Poulter's character?
Luca.
Luca. Their relationship, their friendship is so amazing. Yeah. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think Will Poulter is the most soulful actor out there, and this role is like everything that's brilliant about him times 1,000, and the fact that he and Marcus have this relationship is just fabulous. It's just brilliant. So that's actually my favourite thing about the Bear, I have to say.
I think that
Ayo Dabiri is incredible. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. And they're all Jeremy Allen White. Everyone's good, but there's something incredibly profoundly moving about those two together.
I mean, I love anything that explores male relationships. Any kind of
we've established that quite early on in this podcast.
Not just those relationships, but anything that explores kind of the emotional friendships that between two men, and this is done it really is. It's incredible. I don't have enough good words for it.
No.
Can I ask a question? Jeremy Allen White, who you are close personal friends with, Boydie. I know that because you greeted him warmly outside the studio some months ago when he was in for the Bruce Springsteen film, and Eva Moss Backrat both have eyes that are so blue, it's almost Fremen from Dune. Yeah. They have the eyes of Ibad. It's like absolutely piercing. And I'm watching it, I'm like, have they done something? Do they do something with the saturation? Because I don't believe any non-Fremen person has eyes that
it's
blue.
It's a real thing, actually. Funny you should mention that, because I think it's the Spielberg film Disclosure Day has a lot of intense eye action going on as well. And there's another and Cape Fear.
That's true.
I think sparkly blue weird eyes.
In his case, contact lenses.
It seems to be all the rage. There seems to be a whole eye-based thing going on in very, very well-shot film and TV shows. So it is a thing.
I think it's particularly salient here because Christopher Storer has a thing for extreme close-ups where the camera pretty much resides in the pores on Jeremy Allen White's face.
Yeah.
Like, it is so... Like, as an actor, I'd find it quite disconcerting because it must be right up in there.
He loves doing that thing where you start the first shot of a sequence is such an intense close-up on something you don't know what it is.
Yeah, you're like,
and then
what
he pans
this?
Back and you're like, oh, it's a thing. It's an item of food or something.
And one of the things I loved about this particular show, one of the first lines in the first episode of this is what I thought is a pretty deep cut quote. Richie, very, very film literate, bit of a cinephile, but he quotes Tony Scott's The Last Boy Scout
at the beginning of
the first episode, which is absolutely fucking mad. This is Shane Black's script. He wrote that for The Last Boy Scout. It's a great script. Not everyone involved in that film loves it, but I love it. Me and Chris Hewitt quote this film endlessly.
I love that film. I've loved that film since it came out.
I have seen it so many times.
Yes. But everyone loves that film, James.
When he looks in the mirror and he's like, nobody likes you, everybody hates you, you're going to lose, smile, you fuck. And I thought, it's such an, like, who knows that fucking quote? Like, genuinely, like, it's not, I just thought that was a lovely touch of really obscure quote from a film that I maintain not a lot of people know or like. But I really enjoyed that. And I loved everything about this series. I loved the food, I loved the character stuff, and I love the fact that, because like some of the criticisms of particularly season two of this, but some of the other seasons have been that the seasons have lacked velocity and lacked focus. And sometimes they've seemed a little bit woolly and a little bit all over the place and not sure where they're going. Mm. And I think the shift in this particular season to making it real time, to making it focused on one day, one afternoon, one evening, one service, makes it so laser focused and it gives it such drive that it feels to me like it's almost the best of both worlds, where it's The Bear meets Boiling Point, because it has that almost real time, it's not a one-er by any stretch, but it has that real time velocity and the stress of being in a kitchen and unwavering and kind of just living through that service, especially when everything's going wrong, there's water coming in the restaurant, people have overbooked, they don't have enough tables, they don't have enough food, they're running out of money, the restaurant might close.
There's no electricity,
everything is going wrong. And the tension and the stress, it is so stressful, but not in an anxiety-inducing way, because it's also very funny and touching.
I was about to say that. It's so funny.
It's so, like, it's so... you know, your heart swells when you watch some of these episodes because they're just lovely. And it feels like all of the different threads are coming together in this final season. This might be my favourite season of The Bear. I think it is spectacular.
Me too. I totally agree with absolutely everything you said. It's my favourite season of The Bear. And to talk about comic relief in this show, the Fack brothers. I mean,
who doesn't love a Fack?
Genius. How genius. And there's a great scene.
I thought you were talking about Red Nose Day for a minute there.
No, comic relief as a thing. Like, just the fact that those two are...
They're Laurel and Hardy, aren't they?
They're amazing.
They are.
There's a scene in the toilet, and it's it's so, so funny.
What a brilliant idea, though, on his part, the showrunner, who's
Christopher Storer.
Thank you. To do it this way, to have it all about one night, one service, and the kind of real-time device. I think that's such a clever idea. And we mustn't forget the great... This definitely is the show with the greatest needle drops of recent years, just to name some of them. The people: Radiohead, Pearl Jam, The Replacements, Genesis, REM,
Taylor Swift,
Oasis, Taylor Swift, Led Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin, by the way, they use That's the Way. Led Zeppelin is renowned for being incredibly expensive if you want to use a Led Zeppelin song in anything. How much money they must have spent on the music rights for this show. Oh my God, I reckon it must be at least half the budget. And they're all, and the way they use all of them is so exciting. It's one of the best things about the whole show for me is the use of music and the use of great songs. So it's phenomenal.
A fabulous season of a fabulous show. The Bear, then, which lands on Disney Plus.
Well, I think it's all there now, isn't it?
It's out there now. Yes. All the episodes as well. Yeah. All at once.
Yeah, so even though we were denied the finale, everyone can see the whole thing, including the finale, as it's
happening. And we will have seen the finale by the time this podcast goes out. Yes. So we just haven't seen it.
As soon as that drops, I'm dropping everything to watch it.
Which is tomorrow morning as we record.
Right.
Fabulous.
I'll be there at 6 a.m.
And for everyone who enjoyed the original birth of Chicagoland joke from season one, I would say that makes an encore.
Yeah, it does.
Okay, next up, we have Elle on Prime, and this is a spin-off of the 2001 Reese Witherspoon film, Legally Blonde, which takes her character, Elle Woods, played here by Lexi Mindtree, back to her origins as a kind of perky pink-clad high schooler who gets transplanted from her home in LA to 90s Seattle, which was the home of grunge, and crucially, not a pink-friendly environment. So, Steph, as Russell Crowe once famously said, unleash Elle.
Oh, nice. God, I love Gladiator. Right, okay. I'm really struggling to find anything good to say about this. Let's lay our cards on the table. There's a lot of kind of teen college age dramas coming at us, okay? We've talked about this. We're seeing a lot. So it's allowing us to really dig into what separates the good, the bad from the incredibly unfunny, which is what this is, right? Okay, this is a prequel. It happens before the film Legally Blonde is set. Legally Blonde, obviously, Legally Blonde's a fantastic film. Everyone knows that. If it wasn't a fantastic film, there wouldn't be a musical about it, okay? Right. But...
Okay.
It's just not good. And here's the reasons why, right? Lexi Mindtree, who plays Elle, is lovely and delightful. And my God, this girl's giving it her best, right? But she's giving it her best in what is an absolutely tired plot, in that girl who doesn't fit in goes to school and encounters bullies who are and then overcomes, because even though she's really pretty and she loves to wear pink and she doesn't want to change, she tries to fit in with them. They don't accept her. And then ultimately what will happen is she'll overcome, they'll accept her. And, you know, that's what's going to happen. Okay. But my God, it's dull. It's just like, the bullying parts of it, I thought, were way too much. And I thought it was actually, it was so mean. I thought, I don't need to watch this. It made me feel uncomfortable because it was relentless, the bullying. In the first episode, the bullying that she receives and the people not accepting her, they hammer the point home with every single character she encounters. And it's just not necessary. Every move she makes to try and fit in is rebuffed. And she makes a tiny bit of headway, but it's not enough to sustain a first episode. People have been saying, okay, this is the point about this is to show that you can be like pretty and lovely, you know, outwardly beautiful, but also you can be career driven, and it's like a, it's a feminist story, but it isn't. It's just this, and if you're going to tell that story, there's so many better ways to tell it. And my last point, right? So I think it's basic. There's too much bullying. I think we're in a world where people are doing these kinds of stories. They're doing them better, like in droves. And the other thing that frustrates me about this is it's not as if we haven't had better before that they could have looked at. Riverdale, Dawson's Creek, OC, My So-Called Life. Watch any of those if you've never watched them. If you're coming off of campus. Age to watch this kind of thing. well, obviously off campus, because that's what we're, but then, you know, in the way, you know, Clueless, obviously a great film.
Some people might confuse the two.
But they had a spin-off. Clueless.
Okay. Yeah.
They had a series.
And a stage musical series, as well.
Yeah. The series retained some of the film characters. In the series, and it worked, and it wasn't amazing, but it definitely worked. Donald Faison, who was in the original film, was in the series. This retains no one, obviously, because it's a prequel as well, but it's just rubbish. I can't imagine why anyone would watch this over and above any of the other things, even Every Year After, like even things like that. Ooh,
Steph's gone for the jugular.
Even that is better than this. And I liked Every Year After.
I think this is better than Every Year After.
I'm not sure it is.
I think you're wrong, but let's see what you think.
I really didn't like Every Year After. But this isn't good, no. It's funny because I haven't seen Legally Blonde, I don't think, since it came out.
Yeah, like, it has a charm. And yeah. I think Reese Witherspoon is a large part of that. But she's a fairly one-note character.
Yeah.
But Legally Blonde's thing is not, here is girl who doesn't fit in. It's, here's girl who seems incredibly ditzy, but is actually incredibly smart and capable.
Yes.
So it's all about underestimating the character.
This is so weird. But what I was going to say was, I can't remember. It's literally decades since I saw the film. But is it? I mean, essentially, if you stand back for a minute, this story is about a white, wealthy, upper class, spoiled, blonde, beautiful young woman being ostracized by grunge indie kids in Seattle,
listen to Nirvana and Pearl Jam.
Who, as you say, are bullying her for what reason? Because she's like blonde and wears a lot of pink and is really rich and wants to fit in, and they all hate her because of that somehow. Why? It's such a weird,
so basic,
concept that for me doesn't work on any level of reality or whatever. And I guess I can't compare it to the film because I just can't remember. But if the film was kind of about that, I was like, oh, okay, that's quite interesting. But it's so weird that everyone's so angry with her for why? Like, she's a perfectly nice person. It's just an odd premise for me.
I think the idea here is that, obviously, bearing in mind that she represents everything that counterculture grunge scene kind of railed against.
Come on, it's like...
So that's the thing. They all wear basically greys and blacks, and she wears exclusively pink.
I actually, halfway through, I was thinking, a couple of things raised a smile in me. I quite like the fact that she's taken from her Californian sunny world into like the grey, rainy. It's always raining in Seattle, and literally everyone's wearing Nirvana t-shirts and listening to Pearl Jam. You know, it's like, that is quite a funny.
This was like my friend
idea.
Group at school, by the way.
I'm too old. I was in the late 80s, but I kind of recognize, because I went through a similar thing in the 80s whereby, you know, feminism and political correctness was all happening in the mid to late 80s and then carried on to the 90s. But I just think this is such, it just struck me as such an odd concept. Yeah, it's fine. I genuinely annoyed me about it than Every Year After, which is the immediate comparison. But obviously, it's not good.
Can I say one thing about?
Of course.
So the other thing that really wound me up, and I want to know if this, because when we're talking about these kind of school subgroups, right?
Yeah.
It really, really wound me up that they took that scene from Clueless, that exact scene where they're walking through, like they're getting to the door, and they're saying they're identifying all the different subgroups. In school, and she walks her through the cafeteria, and she says, "That's where the Microsoft kids sit." That's where. Yeah. And I was just like,
completely.
Up with something.
Yeah.
Well,
new,
sure. To be fair, that's actually a gag. The whole point it's a riff on that, every single one of them look the same. Like, that's the gag.
Yeah, that's fair.
I didn't mind that gag.
No, I thought
that, because it's kind of a riff on that whole 10 things, teen
movie
thing.
What summed up the lame lack of creativity in this show was. The meet cute between her and the hunky... Is he a basketball player or whatever? Is he basketball?
It's not ice hockey, I can tell
you. It's not ice hockey. The hunky, handsome basketball player. The ingenious meet cute they come up with is he bumps into her. He bumps into her. Literally, that is it. He just bumps into her. I've come up with something better than that. And then they just stand there looking at each other for about 30 seconds. They know, obviously, he's the love interest. And the other one thing I want to say is the British character, Dustin, of whom she says something like, oh, I thought you were all really weird, but you're just British.
Just British.
Yeah, which is fine. But he is played by someone whose actual name is Zach Looker. I consider that to be one of the greatest names in current youth acting. So all hail Zach Looker, who does his best, by the way, as Dustin, the British guy, and is kind of the best character for me, and he's just called Zach Looker. But yeah, it's not good, and there's absolutely no one on God's earth I'm ever going to watch any more of it.
No, I think that's fair. This came about, by the way, because Reese Witherspoon was watching Wednesday, and it made her think she'd really like to see a young... Elle Woods series.
Oh, it's her production company, isn't
it? Yeah, so she's behind it. And the person who wrote the book that Legally Blonde is based on is an exec producer. So I think lots of people are involved. But as you say, there are so many other shows that just do this better. It's like, why? And then many of them are on Prime. It's like, why would you watch this?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Did you hate it, James, as much as I did?
I didn't hate it. I didn't enjoy it. Yeah. I didn't hate it as much as I hated Life, Larry, and the Pursuit of Unhappiness, for example.
Poor Larry.
What an indictment. Oh my
but
God. Poor
I
Larry,
did not indeed. Enjoy it, and nothing could make me watch another episode of it.
No.
Nothing. Nothing
at all. So you think it was worse than Every Year After or better than Every Year After?
I would 100% watch Every Year After over this.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
Okay. Oh, I don't. I,
yeah,
I disagree
without a doubt.
Okay.
Elven, which is on Prime Video. When, Boydie?
Wednesday, the 1st of July, 2026.
Fabulous. Or not, as the case may be. Right, finally this week, we have Silo, Season 3, the penultimate series, I should say, of Apple's post-apocalyptic science fiction series, which sees Rebecca Ferguson and 10,000 other people, and they are survivors living out the apocalypse in a mile-deep underground bunker. And this is based on Hugh Howey's novels, his Wool series, although this has now moved largely on to the second book, which was Shift. And this introduces an all-new split narrative structure. So you've got Jessica Hennick and Ashley Zuckerman, who you saw at the end of season two. They are looking into the Silo's origins before the apocalypse begins, and then you've got Rebecca Ferguson in the kind of present, which is actually the future. Does that make sense? Good. I'm glad. Boydie, is this a hole you would gladly dig for yourself?
To call you an a-hole.
Yeah, that too.
What are you saying? I famously annoyed you when we reviewed episode one of the previous season, I think.
Did you?
Yes, because I didn't realize.
Were you wrong about season
one? Okay. No. I just hadn't finished season one, and I had to plow on with season two because I didn't have time to catch up.
Let me guess, you haven't finished now seasons one or two?
I absolutely had not finished season two before I had to embark upon season three for this very podcast. And I'm sure Steph, because she's so diligent, and I don't believe you're watching as much World Cup as I am. If you managed to catch up on all of the episodes of Silo in time
no.
for the... No, okay, good.
I did a 30-minute Silo catch-up, if you don't know anything about Silo.
Where did you get that from?
This.
Is it online or something?
Oh, my God. Do you remember a listener wrote in a while back and said, if you haven't, can I recommend you watch?
Because people
do
I wish I remember that.
And they're absolutely brilliant. So now I know.
Okay,
listen, if you
fine.
Just don't... I can talk about Flame Keepers all day, is what I'm saying.
But what I would say is I had the similar reaction, right, to the fact that I hadn't managed to finish season one when I watched season two this time around, which is that this is an absolutely excellent show. I cannot disagree with you that it's a brilliant concept and it's incredibly well done in terms of the world building of the silos and the floors and the different
stairs, the corridors,
the corridors, the huge window into the supposedly poisoned world. Is it or isn't it poisoned?
Well, it's a screen, but I'll let
it's a screen. What do they call it? Window, screen. And then in season three, to make it even better, you've got this really interesting conspiracy theory storyline, which for me, I love a conspiracy theory storyline in general. It's got a real kind of All the President's Men kind of 3 Days of the Condor vibe to it, like a 70s, even down to the way it's shot and everything. And as if that wasn't enough, to add to the overall joy of it, who pops up in the middle of this show than Morven Christie, who is a brilliant British-Scottish actress who you recognise from Grantchester. She was in The Bay, the first season of The Bay. She's a brilliant... I've interviewed her many, many times, and she's a fantastic... And I think this is just brilliant. I recognise her, and I hadn't really thought about the cast or anything before I started watching it, and I hadn't properly read the press release, etc. I was like, who is that? It's absolutely Morven Christie. And so she's right in the middle of this, of the conspiracy storyline, which, by the way, rests upon the idea, the very topical idea, that Iran has unleashed a dirty bomb in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how many Iranian-based storylines there are right now coming out. Clearly, like, the creators have gone, like, years or months ago. So is this in the book?
Well, it's actually... Do you know what? I don't know if it's specifically Iran in the book, but Iran is mentioned at the end of season two. Set up at the end of...
It's interesting how Iran has become the go-to kind of like villain or just place to set terrorism, etc., this kind of thing. So I think it's brilliantly done. I think, she's fantastic, obviously, all the way through. Rebecca Ferguson, she's exec producer as well. I don't know why I didn't finish the first two seasons.
Lazy. Unprofessional.
I don't know. It just... dropped off my mental watch list, but I really feel I should. I'm going to 100% finish this one if it kills me.
Fucking go back and finish the first one.
They're gone.
What's wrong with you?
They're over. I'm immersed in season three, the split storylines.
You
and
are
I
the
will,
actual worst.
Yeah. But but it is really, really good. I would say that. I think it's an excellent series.
But just not good enough for you to watch all the episodes?
No, it totally is good enough. It was just. Yeah, a packed.
You know
calendar.
They still exist. Like, they've not been erased. That you can still go back and watch them. They're still there.
I know, but I had to review these episodes, and I watched three or four of this series.
I tell you what, James, when you watch all of Widow's Bay,
yes.
Boyd will have watched all of Sidon.
Whose side are you on?
Yeah, exactly. Good point. Well made.
Okay, Steph, go on. Hit us with
it. Right. No, you're right. As I've said many times before, like, I am very open-minded and I will watch anything. But one of the things that I do not like is anything starting again. Okay. And I think we had a little bit of discussion before, James, where you said, listen, I think Silo is a bit different because actually there's a world and it's not just this kind of dystopia. It's dystopians at landscapes. It's the nothingness of it and people having to literally find water, find all of that. I can't be doing with it. But that said, what I did was I watched the first episode of season three, and I was like, well, there's absolutely no way I'm going to have, I don't understand anything that's going on. This is absolutely insane. So then I stopped it 10 minutes and watched the catch-up thing, and I was like, God, I'm well into this. It's absolutely an amazing concept. It's brilliant. And what I really like is they limit the nothingness shots that they really do. Like, you only get to see that screen very briefly. I didn't realize, I mean, my God, the cast is stellar. I didn't realize Rashida Jones had been in it. Tim Robbins. I mean, my God, the people they've got common, who I love as an actor.
Harriet Walter.
Yeah, I mean, there's everyone's. Yeah, Harriet Walter's amazing. I'm all for this, and I definitely will continue watching this. But you know what? I'm going to say something that you're going to think is really strange. This is a winter show. This is, for me, is a winter show. No, it is. This is.
You've really broken it.
I don't even know what to do with that information.
for me, right? I tell you why. Okay.
Is Elle a summer show then?
Elle is a never no season show.
It's a never show. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I tell you why. Because the aesthetic is underground. The aesthetic is dark. And in order for me to fully immerse myself in the show, which I want to do because I think it's really good and what I've seen so far I've really enjoyed, I need to be in a cave-like atmosphere of when it turns dark at 3 o'clock. And I think for me, I couldn't fully invest myself in it because it was very hot. I know
you
think that's
mad. Mad opinions you've had on this podcast, that is possibly the worst.
That is an interesting take.
Okay, I bet you, right? I bet you now that there are listeners out there who are like, yeah, I'm going to save that for the winter. It feels like a show. Watching winter.
But for half the storyline now, though, is set in quite summery Washington, D.C. in the past. So at least half of this season is quite sunny.
No, it's about being underground for me. And I think when if I'm going to start this properly, it needs to be, it's a winter show. I'm just saying, it's not that mad. It's a winter show.
It's deranged, as indeed are you. I cannot even with that. So I was, as you know, on set of this particular season. I went to the Silo at Apple Studio, hung out with my close personal friend, Tim Cook.
Yeah.
Spoke to Graeme Yoss, the showrunner, interviewed Rebecca Ferguson. I love this show. Also not a surprise. I think this is the best season so far.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think it's fantastic. I think the split narrative works really well. I think the stakes when you're in the Silo are extremely high. They made a really sensible choice here because the book Shift is only focusing on the Ashley Zuckerman, Jessica Hennick timeline. Whereas what they've done here is you've got elements of new stuff in there, and then they've pulled some elements from Dust, the third novel, into this as well. And it is so compelling and it is so addictive. I watched this entire season some months ago.
Of course you did.
But I really, really do love it. I think it is so good. And this is a year where, because it's kind of been a mystery show. It was like a murder mystery in the first series and there's a mystery in the second one. Like, a lot of answers get delivered in this particular season and it feels like you make a lot of progress. And the kind of rug pull end of this season will knock your socks off.
Nope.
Like, it's really, really good. There is a fourth season coming.
Wait till the winter to watch it,
Steph. Wait till the winter. It's a perfectly summary show.
No.
The fourth season of this show has already been shot. It is in the can. They have wrapped. They presumably disassembled the Silo set, so I can't go back there. But the fourth season will come, I presume, next year.
Yeah.
So,
how much of the huge stairs that are the main feature?
Oh, yeah.
How much of that is real on the set? Is physical?
I ran up and down the stairs. It doesn't go a mile beneath the surface.
No.
I will tell you that.
Okay.
So they've got two of them actually. They've got one big one with sort of green screen all around it, where they can sort of put in whatever floors they're walking through. And then at one point the stairs get blown up. So they have a second one which has the blown up section of the staircase, and that's in a completely different part of the studio. But yes, I played on both of them.
Of course she did.
I mean, Rebecca Ferguson is compelling enough as the as the former engineer. She's incredible.
She can't remember as well at the start, we should say.
There's an amnesia story. Because there was a big twist. So the season two ended with a big twist and then it had an extended epilogue, which was the Zuckerman-Hennick.
Where they introduced the other timeline.
Right.
Yeah.
But it also had a big, like, oh my God, what's happened?
Oh, by the way, I did watch that episode. I watched
the finale. Of course you did, because God forbid you watch things in order properly. Yes.
Really,
or in
offended.
The correct season,
I don't know.
According
I can't
to
work
Steph.
Out. I can't work out whether you're more offended by me not watching all the episodes or Steph waiting to the winter.
Absolutely furious with both of you. honestly, it's utterly unacceptable. But it's wonderful. It's brilliant. If you haven't seen it, for the love of God, go back and watch it from season one, as you are supposed to do. And it doesn't matter that it's 37 degrees outside. It's perfectly fine for this weather. You don't need to wait until it's, a little bit more autumnal, Steph. Honestly, it's wonderful.
Oh, no, you know what? Sort of late autumn.
Fine. Okay. So it's a bi-season show.
Give us the exact dates where we should start watching it.
Jesus.
I'm thinking kind of around November 10th, you can go in.
November 10th. Oh my God, it's like Rivals. We have to wait till November for everything all of a sudden.
Please never listen to anything Steph says. That's my solemn entreaty to you. Right, Silo, which is available on Apple TV Plus
Friday,
as it's called, on Friday.
Apple TV, just called Apple TV.
Just
Friday,
Apple
the 3rd of July, 2026.
Fabulous.
Okay, I'm
a
just
show
say
for
this.
All seasons.
I'm just going to say this. You know, like, how days have colours? You know, like, how Tuesday's blue and Wednesday's green?
Yeah. No!
What, I mean... Don't when you say you know how, and
what
you
are
then
you
say
talking
something
about?
Insane.
Have you got so synesthesia? Insane. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, what is
Sunday?
What
Sunday's red, Saturday's yellow. Everyone knows this.
Oh my God.
Days like God. Shows are like that. I'm just saying.
No, are they though?
I can't be the only one.
Okay.
I can't.
Let's move on, shall we? What else is out this week, Boydie? Whether it can be seen in the summer or the spring or the autumn or the winter.
There isn't a lot, but there is X-Men 97. Oh, God.
No?
Wow.
Okay.
That's season two, launches on Disney Plus on Wednesday. You're actually watching that show?
No, I didn't. I was obsessed with X-Men, the animated series, when I was at university, and we used to go and watch it every day.
Okay.
But no, I don't watch this
one.
X-Men, the animated series is so good, James.
What?
How good is that?
But that's what this is, Steph. So why aren't you watching this?
Oh, I know. Yeah,
Steph is a fan of X-Men.
Yes, X-Men 97 is unfortunately.
Oh, we've got you to write the preview.
Unfortunately, it's a spring show. So
yeah,
I'm never going to live this down. No. But I stand by it.
Okay. From Friday, Channel 4 is streaming Suits LA. Which is obviously the latest entry in the Suits
Sounds
franchise.
Essential.
Stephen Amell is in it. But I don't believe that, what's her name, Meghan Markle's
in it. No.
Fire Country, do you know about that show? It's a huge phenomenon in America. That's a season, the latest season that starts on Sky Witness. And now, on today, Monday the 29th of June, 9 o'clock. I think that might be. Oh, Human Vapor. There's a thing called Human Vapor that starts on Netflix on Thursday, the 2nd of July, which is a Korean TV show about. It sounds very meta because it's about people rebooting a film franchise with a thing called the Human Vapor. And then it turns out to be there really is a human vapor. That's kidding, people. Oh, I think that's what it's about.
Okay.
But yeah, that starts on Thursday, the 2nd of July. And I think that might be about it. Yeah.
That sounds like the plot of Wonder Man, but that's neither here nor there.
It does a bit, actually. Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. What is our pick of the week?
It's got to be the Bear. I mean, Silo's really good, don't get me wrong.
It's 100% the Bear.
It's the Bear and Silo.
Mm, yeah.
The best seasons of both shows. Watch them both.
James, I don't think I've seen you this level of exasperation.
I just can't.
So
I can't. No. Honestly, the pair of you, you've driven me to despair.
Well.
Okay, that's it for this podcast. Dear God in heaven. Please do leave us a 5-star rating. Please do not cancel your subscription to Pilot Plus, even though the prices are going up. And if you have not already subscribed to Pilot Plus, please do subscribe now and lock in the current price for a year so you don't have to pay any more than absolutely necessary. On next week's podcast, Trying is back on Apple TV. Little House on the Prairie is coming to Netflix.
Oh, yes.
And The Westies comes to MGM Plus. We're going to be speaking to Esther Smith for Trying, and we have J.K. Simmons and Tom Brittany for The Westies as well. Though we'll probably put that on the show the week after. But very exciting. Wow. Okay. Brilliant. We're it. We're done. Steph, I hope you're having fun at home. Obviously, it's very summer weather, not winter weather. So you have some very clear summer viewing. I hope you enjoy it.
But you know what, James? Winter is coming.
Winter is coming. And thus, with it, Silo. Honestly, I don't know why I do this podcast. Pilot out.